little taste of the Norwegian group. Yes, I said Norwegian group, Beatty Bell, from their album Home. The song is called Lose and Win. And of course, when we're speaking about sports narratives, then we know that there's always going to be a winner and a loser in terms of the points on the board that determine the victor in that particular match or championship. But the idea of what the real win or the real loss is for the community at large is generally determined by the economics of the situation. And that is why we have invited our next guest to get up really early in the morning, West Coast time, to join us to discuss the economic impact of a Donald Sterling on the NBA and what we as a society can do to demand better equity in that regard. Her name is Danielle Beavers. She is the Economic Equity Program Director for the Green Lining Institute, now joining us on the phone. Good morning. Good very early morning to you, Danielle.
Thank you so much for having me, Stephanie. Happy to be here, and well worth it to get up early for you.
Well, I appreciate that, because the work that the Green Lining Institute is involved in is incredibly important, and it's good to know that you all decided that there were some action steps that needed to come out of this Donald Sterling incident, and really not just speaking on behalf of California citizens, but setting a directive for the rest of the nation to look at what should happen after the NBA Players Association, or the NBA as an organization, has decided to sanction Donald Sterling for his racist comments. But it's a much bigger issue than that.
Absolutely. You hit it right on the nail right on the head. This isn't just about one individual, but about a systemic problem at large, where we're seeing that folks of color are not benefiting at the same rates as our counterparts. Even in huge industries where there's a lot of representation of us in sports, like the NBA,
right?
We see that the players are really diverse, but when we look at the owners, that's not reflected as so much. And when you think about it, the NBA alone is nearly a $12 billion industry. So is that money, is that profit going back into the same communities that those players are going from? That's a question that really I'm not positive in, but we need to find out more. And so that's what some of our action steps entail, is making sure that that money and that profit is returned to communities of color.
Right. And one of the things that is outlined in the press release that you all shared with us yesterday is that according to 538, there are probably 54% of NBA fans are people of color. So this idea of accountability and how you appreciate the fact that you have a multi-billion dollar industry on the backs of largely working class people of color, and yet have owners that show such blatant disregard for not just their players, but also the rest of the fan base that allows them to achieve this incredible financial success, means that we've got to have some checks and balances on all of that.
Exactly. And that is not to say that every single owner shares, Donald Sterling's viewpoints. I certainly hope not. But rather, it's about making sure that our views and our communities are represented in those positions. You know, I think Michael Jordan is the only person of color that's a majority owner of any team in the entire NBA. And when you, like you said, about 60% of the fan base of the NBA is folks of color. So when we think about, we're the ones that are going out and buying the t-shirts, buying the seats, making this the $12 billion industry that it is, are our businesses benefiting from that? Are those dollars coming back to our communities at all? And the answer, sadly, is no. So it's all about making sure that our communities are being reciprocated and being reinvested in, like we've so invested in the NBA.
Right. So, there are some bullet points that the Institute has outlined in the letter that you have sent to Commissioner Silver, asking for the NBA to continue this trend of saying we want accountability. We don't want this kind of energy to exist in our league. And I want to break them down for our listening audience. And if you could just respond to why the Institute has felt that these particular bullet points are necessary, then we can get more of our listeners engaged in continuing to hold them accountable as we approach the end of this season. The first bullet point says, conduct a detailed diversity survey, including not only all levels of staff and management, but also data on the ownership of suppliers, broken down by race, ethnicity, and gender.
Yes, hugely important. So I think we know anecdotally from, you know, seeing the seeing pictures of, you know, the owners together, seeing pictures of the teams themselves, that diversity thins out, right, as you go up the organizational ladder, so to speak.
Right.
But there's not a lot of data out there. And so I think it's time for Commissioner Silver to show some leadership and to exercise his leadership over the league and say, you know, we know that there's a problem just from observing and our lived experiences, but in order to actually take any steps forward, we really need to know where the disparities lie. And so the first step is that you really got to hunker down and examine where your weak spots are. And that's why it's so important to have all of the teams, not just the Clippers, conduct a thorough reflective studies that show how diverse they really are in terms of their workforce and their contracting.
Indeed. The second bullet says create a diversity council reporting directly to the commissioner, whose first task should be to review all of the diversity survey results and make recommendations for improvement.
Yeah. So, you know, diversity is clearly an issue and an opportunity that the NBA can get better at, but it's not rocket science, people. You know, we have civil rights organizations, really great organizations in this country for the past 50, 60 years that have a lot of lived experiences to share and have done a really great job of diversifying other sectors, especially in California. So, you know, stand on their shoulders, use their expertise. So pulling from those existing people that already have created these systems in place in other sectors, you can replicate those results.
Right. And then the third bullet point says release all of the diversity data, recommendations, and progress reports in an annual report to the public, which is one of the ones I found particularly interesting.
Yes. You know, Stephanie, what gets measured gets done. If you have this great survey and then it gets put in some file cabinet somewhere in a basement, it's going to be like it never happened if nobody knows the results of these and then the public isn't calling for the NBA to take action on them. So once we see where, you know, diversity challenges and opportunities lie in the NBA, then it will act, you know, it will hold the Commissioner Silver and the rest of the owners in the NBA to actually be held accountable to making change and making progress.
Yeah, you know, and I think that's a really important thing for us to bear in mind in a midterm election year. There are a lot of people who get disenfranchised from the election process when it's not big and sexy for the president. But the fact is that maintaining a connection to the roles that each of our elected officials play in running our great nation is incredibly important to how effective that will be and how much that takes everyone's opinions into consideration. I think that calling for this survey to be done and then for the results to be released to the public allows many more people to stand with the Institute in saying that we're watching and we have expectations based on what we've learned.
Exactly. Thank you so much for saying that. You know, this is so much bigger than just the NBA, than just the sports, than just the Clippers on itself, but really about, you know, what is democracy going to look like now that we have President Obama in office and that folks of color, you know, we're becoming an increasingly powerful force in this country and we're primed to become the majority by 2050, right?
Yeah.
Are we fully engaged in these systems? Are we fully represented? Are people that are calling the shots in this country, do they look like us? Do they understand us? And so, you know, while they, you know, there's always going to be that responsibility on them to come to our communities and try to understand us, we also need to step up and make sure that we're fully informed and participating in these systems and calling people out when we see that they're not benefiting our communities like they should.
And so within that context, let's talk a little bit about your position with the Greenlining Institute and how that factors into what the organization does overall. I think many of us are intrigued by the idea that you are the program manager for economic equity, and that means you probably stay very busy.
Yes, I get to get up very early and do all the time, and it's lots of coffee. Yeah, no, I'm very, very blessed to be part of the Greenlining Institute. We were formed about 20 years ago in response to redlining, which is the practice of corporations literally and sometimes figuratively drawing red lines around low-income communities or communities of color and choosing not to invest in them, choosing not to have a presence in them. So, you know, sometimes you don't see grocery stores or banks or, you know, big corporations in those towns. And so we've really been dedicated to non-traditional civil rights issues like economic equity, environmental equity, health, telecommunications, trying to bring equity and agency back into communities of color. And so being able to stand on the shoulders of so many change makers out here on the cutting edge in California has been so exciting, and really happy to hear that diversity is no longer a niche issue, right, in communities of color. It's something that I hear about in, like, you know, diversity conventions when it's me and 50 other people. Now it's coming into the mainstream conversation and being talked about on, you know, great programs like this. And so we, I think it's good that folks are rallying around, you know, controversies like the Donald Sterling case, but we need to keep the ball rolling and understand that this signifies much more of a problem in our country, and making sure that folks of color really are represented.
And before I let you go, I would love for you just to speak to, you know, we are making a very concerted effort here at WURD to include more youth voices. And for you to have such a pivotal role with the Greenlining Institute, you're also a young woman. So what got you passionate about these issues and decide that this was going to be a career path that you would pursue?
Thank you. That's a great question. You know, I grew up blue collar in Atlantic City, and, you know, came from a community of color, and never thought I was going to get the opportunity to go to college. And, you know, literally, you know, won a lottery ticket, I guess you could say, and got into a really great university, and felt, you know, petrified, to be honest. You know, I was with kids that were driving BMWs, and I had never written a term paper before. And I felt really angry for a long time, and I didn't know what to do, and I felt silent. And then I came along the Greenlining Institute, which has a really robust leadership academy for folks that have just graduated college or law school. And the whole notion is about making sure that they're training the next generation of civil rights leaders, right? Making sure that this movement is sustainable and that the baton is handed off, because our work is not over. When it comes to racial and economic justice for communities of color. And so being able to not only be at the table, but being able to engage with decision makers at 23, 24 years old, it's unheard of, but I understand the intention behind it, and I feel like I'm only going to be a better leader for the next generation.
Well, I am thrilled because I had no idea that you had the regional connection with us here in Philadelphia. So that's all the more reason why we are going to keep your information handy, young lady, and make sure that we follow up with you, not just on the NBA issue, but continue to check in with you. And maybe we can look at perhaps having a monthly segment where you let us know about some of the hot issues that the Greenlining Institute is looking at and maintaining this dialogue, because I think it's incredibly important.
Yes, please. And I'm often back home bothering my parents. You know, laundry tips. So I'd love to come in and visit.
We can absolutely arrange that.
And it's so, you know, it's so important to support, you know, diverse owned businesses and businesses such as yours that are, you know, specifically reaching out to ethnic communities and making sure that our voices are, you know, supported and our issues are directly taken on. So, you know, I want to thank you and your staff. I know that you're probably understaffed and overworked like the rest of us, getting the message out and making sure that, you know, like, our issues are being, you know, shared amongst the community.
Absolutely. Well, we are going to let you get to your very busy day very early in the morning, but we certainly thank you, Danielle, for joining us on our airwaves today. And I will have either I or Troy will get back to you directly very soon to try and schedule that sort of monthly check-in with the hot button topics.
Wonderful. Thank you, Stephanie. Have a great day.
You too.